This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Come on, how are you supposed to sell that to your friends? I'm taking a private jet today. Oh, really? Where are you going?
Oakland.
We'll say L.A.
I'm sorry, where? Oakland. Nobody's going to take a private jet to Oakland.
Sure.
And L.A.
LA area. L.A. area.
Oakland's on the L.A. area?
Yeah, that's right. Bay Area.
Wow.
That was a stretch.
Yeah, just a bit.
Bay Area.
And then this Mike O'Brien thing. He wants more affordable housing. Do you understand, Mike? Look, this is why you're getting bounced out of office on your big fat butt. Do you understand that everybody has one line item in their family budget for taxes? And when you push for every single tax increase, that makes everything less affordable. Housing and food and transportation. So please spare us this. You want to fight for more affordable housing when you've done as much as anybody to make Seattle impossible for working class and poorer people with the taxes that you have tried to insist upon. So those two things from your newscast jumped out at me. And then there's this. Remember our old buddy James Holzhauer, who had that fantastic run on Jeopardy?
Yes.
And so he's got to decide what. And by the way, I have only watched Jeopardy one time since that streak ended. I would not miss it, and I usually watched it live every
night. I remember.
Yeah. I was just so dialed in, but I just have no interest now that he's off the show. And I hope that, you know, Alex Trebek can pull off a miracle,
mm-hmm.
but it still bothers me knowing how deathly ill he is.
And he looks good, and he's doing
unbelievable.
Yeah, it's actually inspirational.
He's a trooper.
He continues to work.
Yeah, he's an absolute trooper. Anyway, James Holzhauer, now that his run on Jeopardy is over, he has to figure out what he's going to do next. And he has said that he would like to work because Bill James was kind of the leading edge guy of what's known as sabermetrics, and that is analyzing baseball statistics. And the whole movie Moneyball was based on that, that the Oakland A's had a GM named Billy Bean, he's still with them, who could find hidden value in players and then acquire them. And so that's what baseball teams try to do now. The problem is everybody has a sabermetrics expert and usually a staff of them on their team. And so James Holzhauer, he would like to work for a Major League Baseball front office. And he mentioned the Chicago Cubs in particular, but he was talking to MLB Network Radio on Sirius earlier today, and he said there's one other team he would consider.
Or if another major league team called you, would you have interest in joining any front office?
You know, it would have to be the right situation. That's, place that actually listens to me, I think would be the number one thing. I've talked to some people who have worked in front offices, and they say, you know, like the worst feeling is when they really pour their heart into a project and the ownership just isn't interested. You know, I don't understand why they hired these guys in the first place if they're not going to listen to them, but, you know, that's beyond my ken. I don't know. You know, I like living in Las Vegas. I'm not especially keen to move, but, you know, my wife loves Seattle. She maybe can put a word out to the Mariners for her.
Oh, yes. Jerry DePoto, yeah.
We know Jerry pretty well. We can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go. Bring to the Mariners.
Do it.
Yeah. What could you lose?
Right?
You're paying Felix Hernandez $27 million this year to do nothing. Why don't you give this guy a few hundred grand and see if he can come up with some miracle? I mean, he showed that he was able to revolutionize how to play Jeopardy. If he truly is a successful sports bettor, that's a very, very rare skill.
Would he have to give up his sports betting, though?
Yes.
So would he, I mean, would that be something? It seems like he would get bored very easily.
That's a good point. Yeah, because a good sports bettor would probably be able to make well into the six figures.
Exactly.
And so would he get the rush from... But if this is something he's always wanted to do, it's been a dream of his, why not take it? The Mariners have, again, and we're going to give away some Mariner tickets later this show. This is a great way for me to sell them. But they have the longest drought in the playoffs of any team in baseball, football, hockey, basketball. Why not take a shot on somebody like Jeopardy James Holzhauer?
I think it'd be fun for it. I mean, you commit to a year. I think that this is him not staying, you know, or getting bored doing betting, and this would be something new and
energize it.
And you know, there's probably a little ego there that would want to like contribute to the success of a team.
Can we get him or DePoto on tomorrow?
I'll work on it. He's tough. He won't. He has said before he'll only talk to Fox Sports because that's what he watches.
Yeah, but, no. What's
ESPN?
His name? Scott Van Pelt on ESPN.
Oh yeah, yes.
Yeah. But
I'll try.
But he talked to MLB now. If you tell him, we're the Mariners station.
Exactly. He said, put in a good word. Well, what better word could you put in? Let him do it himself.
Yeah, and Wyman and Danny and Jim, they talk to DePoto all the time.
Yep.
So we could try to broker this deal.
I like it.
Okay, let me see what I can do on that one. Okay, next up in the Fastest 15. So a listener sent this to me on Twitter. Have you ever heard of the Gordon Biersch? It's a brewing company and restaurants.
Yes.
And they used to have at least one or two in the Seattle area.
I think there was one in the Bellevue, in Bell Square. And
I think there was
one
Pacific
here.
Place.
Yeah, right by the theaters downtown.
Well, isn't it still there?
No.
Apparently not.
Wow.
Closed all their Washington locations.
Wow. Okay. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, we had to track them down because they have a kids menu now. And Ursula, let me just hand you this photo. A listener took a picture of this. And tell me what the two kids are saying to each other on the Gordon Biersch menu.
Okay. So on the left-hand side, it's a boy with big eyes saying, we should visit Seattle sometime. And then on the right side, there's a girl with kind of scared eyes saying, no way, I'm scared of needles. Okay.
So
what?
So what do you take away from that?
Well, given what has been dominating discussions for the last couple of years, you would assume, are they talking about drug needles?
Well, Nicole called the Gordon Biersch headquarters.
Is this real?
It's real. But she called them in Colorado. Look at what's at the top left of the children's menu.
At the top left. Not the grilled cheese sandwich.
No, on the picture.
Space Needle.
They claim that they are talking about the Space Needle.
Well, of course
there.
They are.
I don't believe that for one second. I think that's their excuse for making fun of the horrible heroin problem.
There's nothing to make fun of, though. Man.
No.
Oh, that is too much.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you to the listener who tweeted that. To me.
Yeah, this would not fly if they were still here
in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it? Why not?
No.
I think people would think it was funny.
As sad as I am about some of the things that have happened in the city, it was like days like we had this weekend. When you go around and there's still so much beauty in Seattle.
Yeah. Oh, there is. It's just sad that all of us were conditioned to see the word needles as heroin needles.
And the thing is,
I'm still a cheerleader for Seattle, although
for 50 plus years, the Space Needle was the iconic landmark of Seattle.
And to some degree, it still is.
No, it's been complete. We just proved, because we all had the same reaction. We just proved that now when you hear the word needle, you don't think about the Space
Needle. Once you also said scared of needles.
Yeah. You think about heroin.
Great.
Okay, next up in the Fastest 15, I just wanted to share this really nice email that we got from a listener. I love hearing from our newer listeners. I appreciate our longtime listeners. I love how many new people have come aboard listening to the radio show, and this was just very, very sweet that we got this weekend. Hi, Dory. My name's Michael. I just wanted to say that you put the biggest smile on my face. I'm a newer listener. I've only been listening for about a week, and you're my new favorite show on radio. Actually, you're the only show I listen to on the radio. Your stance on politics and everything you say is pretty much the exact same thing as I am thinking. Well, I'm listening to your show. I'm just wishing that everybody across the nation could hear you and what you're saying. And all these politicians could hear what you're saying. And Kamala Harris could hear what you're saying. And I wish everybody could hear you because you're seeing things that I wish I could shout from the rooftops about the state of our country, the state of our city, the state of our local government. You are so spot on. And you're not afraid to say what everyone else is thinking. I just wanted to say thank you and give you praise. Love the show. Keep up the fantastic work, and I'll keep listening. That was from Michael. But it's so nice that we have new people coming aboard, and I really do appreciate that. You know, a lot of people are discovering us, even as long as we've been on. That means an awful lot to us. Okay, down to San Francisco we go. Or as Ursula would call it, Los Angeles.
Los Angeles area. I am giving like hundreds of mile radius there.
Yeah. So there is a video that has gone viral, not just in the Bay Area, but worldwide. So here's some of the background. There is a homeless person who camps out right outside this office building of some sort. And I'll back up a little bit. When I was 16, working at the print shop on Capitol Hill, one day I filled a big bucket of water. I climbed up on the roof, and I got one of my coworkers who operated a printer press. I got him to lure the two bosses outside the front door of the business. It was a 95-degree day, and I dumped a bucket of water on the two bosses. Kind of a dicey thing for a 16-year-old to do.
Yeah.
But they thought it was kind of funny. And they got me back tenfold a couple months later.
When they did what?
Oh, jeez.
Not fired you.
No, they did not fire me. Oh, man. I've never told this story. There was kind of this is a really old building on 15, right across from the QFC up on Capitol Hill. And there was a kind of narrow pipe that was in the ceiling right above the toilet.
Oh, no.
And one day I was in the toilet doing a number two. And they filled a bucket, and that pipe hadn't had water in it for probably 40 years. And so the water came down black, hit me. I was so scared. I ran out of the toilet with my pants around my ankles. It was horrifying. And I had nothing to complain about because I was the one who started the whole thing by dumping water on them.
Thank God that we didn't have social media then.
Oh, man. Now, if somebody would have started a GoFundMe for me, and I would have been retired at age 16. So, anyway, it was horrible. I mean, I had just brown water dripping off me.
Gross.
Pants at the ankles. Did I mention that part? Okay. So in San Francisco, there was a home.
Now everyone's picturing that.
I know.
Oh,
you're welcome.
I hope it's not an accurate picture. Please exaggerate some things. Okay. Anyway, this homeless woman was camped outside of this building, and apparently a guy asked her to leave, to move along, and he says that she just met him with a string of obscenities. So he got up on the roof with a big bucket of water, and he dumped it on this homeless woman and her belongings. And so people want to identify, and somebody got it on video. In a building across the street, they caught it all on video, and somebody offered a $1,000 reward for anybody who could identify the soaker dude. It turns out the soaker dude is named Don Soaker, S-O-K-E-R. And in an angry tirade on Facebook, he outed himself. He said, "When I asked her to move, I was roundly cursed. What's so bad about a cold shower on a hot day? Also, I've never done this before, and she simply moved down to the next building. Homeless activists are demanding an apology. They said Mr. Soaker not only needs to give a public apology, but also should pay damages to the woman he terrorized with water buckets. Having yourself and your gear soaked with water when you don't have a home to get warm and dry is no joke. An apology coupled with a gracious offer of temporary housing or financial support would go a long ways in demonstrating his remorse to a horrified community. Last I checked, public opinion was strongly on the side of Mr. Soaker. They said, look, he's frustrated. We're all frustrated with the homelessness problem. They can be vile when you tell them to move along. And sometimes you have
but that's, you don't want to encourage people to take out their frustrations on people.
No.
That's
no. I would not do, I would not do what he did. I mean, that's a level of cruelty that I would not be able to do. But I thought it was interesting, and I thought it was also very revealing of just how deep the frustration is. As I was reading the comments on this and all these Bay Area websites over the weekend, that the public opinion was majority, and it wasn't like 90-10, but it was probably 65-35, was in favor of the guy who dumped the water on the homeless woman. And I mean,
that's sad. That's actually sad. I mean, I understand the frustration, but that's just like losing a bit of humanity
yes,
there.
Yeah, it's not a nice thing to do. She wasn't damaged. She wasn't hurt. She wasn't financially damaged. Nothing that was in her possessions was worth anything. So asking for him to pay for her relocation and temporary housing and financial support, I think that's ridiculous that her supporters are asking for. But it just is another bit of evidence of just how deep the frustration is in San Francisco, in Seattle, in Portland with the homelessness issue. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
The 15 minutes will give you the world. A little later today, we'll give away some Mariner tickets. And also, I'm really excited. We talked to this guy about a year ago, and he was just a great, fun guest. So I'm happy to tell you that the legendary Arsenio Hall is going to be back next on the Dory Monson Show. Well, a few weeks ago, I saw a little banner ad on a website that Arsenio Hall is coming back to our neck of the woods. He's going to be up at the Silver Reef Casino in Ferndale on July 11th. And I said, we have to get him back on because when he was on with us about a year ago, he was just quite simply one of the most entertaining, fun, energetic guests we've ever had. So let me welcome back to the show Arsenio Hall. Good to talk to you again, Arsenio.
DM, what's up, dog? Good afternoon to you.
Here's what I've learned. That...
Wait. Okay. First of all, you just did the worst thing you could do to me. You just put the bar so high.
Yes.
He was a great guest, and we got to have him back. Now, how can I live up to that intro, dog?
That, because I know that you can and will, so I wouldn't challenge you if I thought you weren't going to be able to live up to it. But here's what I've learned, Arsenio. Talk show hosts, people who have been talk show hosts, tend to be great guests because over the years, you had people who would just come on and they had nothing to say, and they thought that their boring personality would just carry them through. And then you had guests who came out on fire, and they had prepared stuff. And I think talk show hosts know what it takes to be a great talk show guest.
You're absolutely right. Because, you know, just to use a name that everybody knows, take Jay Leno. No matter who you are, when you interview Jay Leno, he's going to be a great guest. First of all, he's an entertainer. Second of all, he knows what a talk show host wants. So you're absolutely right. Those kind of guys are very, very good as guests. Of course, I'm no Jay Leno. But you're right. You're right once again. You're never wrong.
Yes.
You should go run the Knicks. They need someone who's never wrong. Because lately, they've been always wrong. I just woke up, man. I heard Stephen A. Smith's voice coming out of my neighbor's house.
He was despondent. He's absolutely despondent today.
Oh gosh, it's nuts. I know nothing about the Knicks, but already I know today is a horrible day on the East Coast, I guess.
Right. Well, it's not bad if you're in Brooklyn.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Well, not to get into sports,
right.
But it turns out this is not about coming to New York. It's about coming to Madison Square Garden. There are young men who still want to be in New York, the number one market in the world, but they don't want to mess with Dolan, and they don't want to mess with Madison Square Garden and things like that. But we're getting off the...
We sure are. Okay.
Yeah, we're sitting in the afternoon talking sports.
I spent the whole first time you came on the show talking about your late night show because I was so fascinated with it and the evolution of it. And the one thing that I didn't get that deep into with you was you going back to stand-up. And I was reading about how you were a little despondent because you had a little reboot of the show. That didn't work out after a couple of years. And you said, I got to go back to my foundation. Tell me about that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you do some soul searching whenever you experience a hiccup in life. You do a little soul searching and figure out where you're at. And, yeah, I was a little down, but I was trying to figure out, everything happens for a reason, I believe. And I was thinking, like, so what was this moment about? And, you know, I realized that even though I only did that show for like a season and a half, so many incredible things went on that I would never want to change. Like I got the last interview with Prince, who was a wonderful friend and an incredible musician. Mm-hmm. So I started looking at all the positives. And then I had to decide, so what do you want to do next? And my son had gone away to college. And I think when he was like 1 year old, I had done my last stand-up date, and I didn't want to be on the road. You know, I didn't want to be traveling around while my kid was growing up. I wanted to know his favorite color. Yeah. I wanted to be at every Little League game. I wanted to know his best friends. I didn't want to be at Yuck Yucks in Toronto, you know, every time something monumental happened in my son's life. So I came off the road, and I tried to do things that allowed me to stay in Los Angeles. But basically, now that he's in college, I'm sitting soul searching, and I'm like, the thing I love most in the world is being in a room with a bunch of people live. No standards and practices. You know, I don't have Les Moonves on the side telling me what I can't say. I wanted to go back to that, and I started going in the clubs. And basically, more specific, George Lopez called me up one night, and he knew what I was going through. As a matter of fact, George has probably gone through the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, hey, I'm going to do this gig tonight. Why don't you go with me? And I went with him just to hang out as a friend, you know. And all of a sudden, George comes out in his little stand-up suit that he wears, you know, and he says, why don't you go on and bring me on? And as I walk away, he says, and do 10 minutes. I'm not ready yet. And it was a friend tricking another friend into doing something he knew that I needed. And I tell people all the time, stand up saved my life, you know, because it just put me back in a place where I needed to be, of having something that I loved, having a goal that I could chase. And I hadn't done it in 20 years. All of a sudden, I'm back on doing stand-up around the country, and everything seems to fall in place. Now I'm doing stand-up. I just shot a special. I'm about to go into Coming to America 2. And as a matter of fact, Eddie Murphy's been popping into clubs. I think he wants to do it again. So at some point, maybe there'll be a Coming to America stand-up tour following the movie.
Ooh.
But we're in pre-production right now, getting all that stuff ready.
So if you don't mind me getting too heavy here, when you had the Arsenio Hall show, you were a national cultural phenomenon. You had done something that no African American had ever done. You were a kingmaker. Bill Clinton turned around his whole campaign on that show. So how hard is it emotionally to go from being the hottest thing in the country to just one of many stand-ups who's trying to find a gig?
Wow. You know, it depends on, you know, when I was a kid, they used to always say, find something you love and you'll never have to work. The one thing about stand-up, I found my place in life. I love making people laugh. And there's no higher form of it than stand-up. You, a glass of juice, a stool, and a mic. And to be honest with you, I got money. If I die and come back, I'll have money left over.
Right.
So God is taking care of me. You know, I don't have some of the problems that Hollywood can bring you that leave you broke. I've been a very logical, balanced man, and I've been blessed. So the bottom line is I can do what I love. And lately, it's been being a father and doing stand-up. I love doing it.
Yeah.
And I go out some nights. I'll call guys like Dane Cook, and we'll go hit a club some nights in Los Angeles for no money because, you know, if you're a stand-up, that's what you do. And you do it forever, whenever you can.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. So I know that you, do you talk about politics much? Because I think most people know you were the winner on the fifth season of Celeb Apprentice. So you got to see our president up close and personal. I saw you tweeting a little bit about the Democratic debates last week. Do you have somebody on the Democratic side you're liking?
Well, you know, I'm the worst guy to talk to politics about because I hate politics. No. I hate politicians. When I do my act, I call myself a Republicrat. I'm the guy in the middle who just doesn't trust any of them. When you have an election between Hillary and Donald Trump, I know them both. And Hillary and Donald Trump, that's like asking me who my favorite Menendez brother is, okay? it's horrible. I'm a Republican. I think that says it all.
Yeah, well, I couldn't vote for either one of them. And so, you know, my listeners knew. I was on the record of saying that, you know, I lean much further right, but I couldn't vote for Trump the first time around. Did you see things during the Celebrity Apprentice that made you in your wildest dreams think he could be president?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I'm one of those guys that was in the mix at that time around Mark Burnett and Donald Trump and the heads at NBC. And I actually thought that what they were talking about when they said, Mr. Trump's thinking about running for president again, I felt it was something they did around the fall whenever Apprentice was about to start up again.
Right.
And I thought it was something that brought publicity and brought attention and eyeballs to Donald Trump. And then when it's time to make a decision, you pull away and you say, oh, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do another year of Celebrity Apprentice. And this time around, a few things went, you know, it was almost like the NBA atmosphere. Some things went on at NBC, and there was another artist that got more money than Donald Trump from NBC, and he actually got angry at them. And when you look back at what went on, it's not as much Donald Trump deciding that time to run as it was him being angry at NBC because he didn't get the amount of money he wanted for Celebrity Apprentice. And that made the decision. So that time around, instead of it being a publicity-seeking campaign,
right,
it was a presidential-seeking campaign, and he actually ran. I think it was one of the ladies on The Voice got more money than him, and he got angry when he heard about it behind the scenes. I don't know how public that is, but that was what made him angry, and that made him leave NBC and head for Pennsylvania Avenue.
Man, if getting angry at your employer is what it takes to be president, I'd be on my fifth term right now.
It worked for that reality host. I don't know if Julie Chen can turn it into a presidency.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Arsenio Hall is going to be at the Silver Reef Casino in Ferndale July 11th. You can get tickets at silverreefcasino.com. And Arsenio, I always love having you. And you know what? You lived up to the billing. You lived up to the intro, do you?
You know what? I really appreciate you, dude. Have a good afternoon. What's the temperature like up there?
It's gorgeous. It's high 70s today. It's going to be up in the mid-80s next week. It's going to be gorgeous when you come up here.
That's going to be incredible. I'll see everybody there. If you want to come, dude, there's always two tickets for you. And you're my favorite supersonic. So come on through if you want to. We're going to laugh, have a good time. If you haven't seen me live, you haven't seen me. It's a lot of fun. Come on in.
All right. Silver Reef Casino, Ferndale, July 11th. Tickets, silverreefcasino.com. Arsenio, we'll talk to you next time. Thank you, sir.
Take care of yourself, buddy.
All right. The legend, Arsenio Hall, joining us. You want to weigh in on any of this? The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. Lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Thanks again to Arsenio Hall for coming back on with us. He started off talking about some of these crazy NBA contracts that have been signed. How about you want to hear a really refreshing NBA contract story? Darren Collison, he's not exactly a household name, but he's accomplished something pretty remarkable. In his first 10 seasons, he's averaged at least 10 points and 3.5 assists per game in every one of those 10 seasons. Only 26 guys in the history of the NBA have done that. And he's healthy. He's 31 years old. He was set to make an estimated $10 to $12 million a year in free agency this offseason. But he told teams to not bid on him because Darren Collison has decided he's going to retire from the NBA at his earning peak so he can concentrate on helping the less fortunate through his Jehovah's Witnesses faith. He said, "While I still love basketball, I know there's something more important, which is my family and my faith. I am one of Jehovah's Witnesses, and my faith means everything to me. I receive so much joy from volunteering to help others and participate in a worldwide ministry. The joy I feel is unmatched. With that being said, I've decided to retire from the NBA." And then he thanked all the great teammates that he'd had, including LeBron James. And he said, "Basketball's been my life since I was a child. I could never imagine finding anything that brings me more joy than I get from playing the game." But then he thanked his wife, for she has guided our family through everything you could imagine during the many NBA seasons. "For the amount of moves that we've made, the day-to-day challenges we faced, and all the while dealt with the emotions of an up-and-down season, she is our strength." So somebody who's putting his faith ahead of unimaginable riches, who's going to make $10 to $12 million this next season. I admire people who see something beyond what is just in front of us here. Big Lead 2 coming up next. Breaking news, too.